On Fronteras this week, we're taking a look at economics. President Trump's stance on immigration is fueling a new form of patriotism among Mexicans, and that's fueling economics at the border. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio, and this is Fronteras, a public radio show about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. The Trump administration's actions on immigration are reshaping the way consumers are spending money in the San Diego-Tijuana region, and Mexico is reaping profits that used to come to the U.S. Jean Guerrero of KPBS explains.
This is el área, el area code de aquí.
Lizbeth Miranda is buying a T-shirt in Tijuana. It has the number 664 emblazoned across the front. 664 is the Tijuana area code. Like thousands of other Tijuana residents, Miranda used to drive into the U.S. to do clothes shopping in San Diego. But now, she prefers to shop south of the border, at stores like Tijuana iHeart 664.
Pues la verdad me gusta comprar más aquí en,
the truth is, I prefer to buy things here to help my country. Above all, I'm proud of being Mexican and I want to support my country.
She says Trump's negative comments about Mexicans have made her want to show off her Mexican pride. Miranda is not alone. Avenida Revolucion, a main Tijuana avenue next to the border, used to attract mostly San Diego tourists who wanted to have a cheap margarita or buy Mexican souvenirs. Now it's crowded with Mexicans who want to shop here too. The president of Tijuana's Chamber of Commerce, Mario Escobedo Carignan, says President Trump's immigration rhetoric is offensive. Everything from Trump's descriptions of Mexican immigrants as rapists to the claim that Mexico will pay for the new border wall. It's awakened a newfound sense of patriotism, and it's been great for Tijuana retail.
What Trump has done is make us turn toward Mexico and want to do what he's saying. He says first the U.S., then the rest of the world. So we're doing the same.
Tijuana vendors like Tijuana iHeart 664 are starting to offer merchandise geared specifically toward locals. Another store, Dorado, sells home decorating items showcasing Tijuana pride. Hector Carrera works the cash register and says the store is seeing a boom.
People don't want to cross anymore. There's just nothing for them there, I think.
He says it's because Tijuana is offering better prices now. But Trump also has something to do with it.
It's definitely like a trending topic between everyone. Everyone knows about Trump. Everyone knows about the wall. And everyone cares about it.
While Tijuana has seen the benefits of the U.S. president's comments about Mexico, San Diego businesses are taking a hit. The neighborhood of San Ysidro, which sits right on the north side of the border, used to be a magnet for Tijuana shoppers. Not anymore. The San Ysidro Chamber of Commerce says retail citywide has dropped 30% to 50% in the past year.
People don't want to come.
Sunil Gacreja owns Sunny Perfumes in downtown San Ysidro.
So we totally, 99% of our customers are Mexico-based. If they don't cross, we don't sell. And basically not just my store, all over San Ysidro.
He says he's seen a 50% decrease in sales since Trump was elected. Olivia Campos is the owner of Carolyn's Shoes next door.
Gracias.
She says rumors tied to Trump's hardline stance on immigration are also discouraging people from crossing the border because they fear interacting with customs officers.
They're afraid they'll take away their passports, their green cards. Some people say they're even checking cell phones.
Campos says sales in her store have plummeted 70% since November. Business in San Ysidro was already down last year because of a plummeting Mexican peso, which was hurting the purchasing power of Tijuana consumers in the U.S. But the exchange rate has since stabilized. The president of the San Ysidro Chamber of Commerce, Jason Wells, now says that fear, uncertainty, and anger tied to the Trump administration are to blame for the struggling economy.
I get asked about the walls, or the wall, all of the time. And I said, you know what? A future physical wall isn't our problem. It's the current psychological wall that this White House has already built.
Wells says the community is trying to devise new strategies to recover lost business in the U.S., perhaps diversifying products and services or offering discounts. But for now, Mexico will continue to reap the profits that once belonged to the U.S. For Fronteras, I'm Jean Guerrero.
For more on this trend, Jean's KPBS colleague, Maureen Cavanaugh, talked with Jason Wells, executive director of the San Ysidro Chamber of Commerce.
Tell us more about how Tijuana and Baja shoppers have typically crossed into the U.S. to make purchases.
Well, I mean, typically you had
each family coming across sometimes daily, sometimes once a week. There's a large number of workers in the U.S. that live in Tijuana and the Rosarito area. So they may be coming every day and just buying little things piece by piece as they come back. I think one of the things that ever since the early to mid-2000s when there was the perception of violence due to the President Calderon's war on drugs and so forth, we really lost, we as the region lost a lot of the casual tourist or the local tourist. So really, you still, with 135,000 crossings a day, the majority of them, like majority, 97, 98% of them are coming three or more times a week. So it's either school, work, relatives, what have you. So those are constant shoppers, lower amounts, lower purchases.
So you saw a little bit of a drop-off around 2007, 2008, but when did you notice this big fall-off starting to occur?
We've had steps. So, 2007, 2008, again, the perception of violence in Tijuana caused some people to stop crossing. I think the next step was, and interestingly enough, it wasn't the economy tanking in 2008, because again it hit Mexico later. Folks were still coming. The next step really was about 2012, after CBP started 100% ID inspections.
Customs
and Border Protection started the 100% ID inspections, and so that started causing wait times to get over 2 hours, and so that was the last biggest piece. And then about a year and a half ago, once the peso got to 17 to 1, after years of being 10-ish, right, and 12-ish for a few years, it got to 17 to 1. We saw it jump up to 22 right after the last election. That's been the last big hit.
Are certain businesses hurting more than others?
Yes. I do want to say, we often talk about the negatives. I mean, we still have a thriving industry, the cell phone business, phones, services, accessories, so forth. Obviously, the brand name clothing in the outlets, the non-brand name warehouse clothing that we have on the boulevard. Obviously, money exchange, it's ridiculous to change your money anywhere other than San Isidro as far as rates are concerned. San Isidro, its core businesses are still doing very well. But you've got a lot of the mom and pops on the boulevard that are suffering from this. So yes, we've seen the casual shoppers. What we've seen again since this last election is just because of the uncertainty of what's going on. Are they checking phones? Are they checking certain types of visas? This and that. Since the election, we've seen a huge drop off for some of the smallest of our businesses.
We heard in Gene's feature that a couple of those business owners say they're losing 30%, 50%, 70% of their business. How does a small business survive if business drops off so much?
Unfortunately, what we've seen in the last year and a half is they don't. Otherwise, we still have, just due to the magnitude of crossings that we have, the holiday season is still keeping some afloat. But again, our last holiday season was, just in December. People still weren't really understanding what had just happened, kind of thing. So, this year is going to be very telling, at the holiday season at the end of the year.
If there really is a surge in patriotism in Mexico that's fueling business in Tijuana, how does San Isidro compete?
One of the things that we're doing, San Isidro had never really been set up to serve the residents in that area. Number one, it's, very disadvantaged community, et cetera. And because it's fairly new to have, the residential area there. I mean, I get people all the time, they remember their grandparents' dairy farm or horse farm, and there wasn't a whole lot of houses around. And this is just, people my age, right, that are remembering their grandparents and such. So they'd never really been conditioned to serve the resident. And now we've got several housing areas. There's Coral Gates, Remington Hills, where I live. There's Ocean View Hills that are, these are today $500,000-$600,000 houses. These are, people with spending ability and so forth. So one of the things we're doing is actually kind of looking northward. However, we can't change the basis of who we are. I mean, we do serve a binational region and a border crosser. So it is very unfortunate, but it is understandable why, they would kind of start taking that turn, they being, the chambers of commerce and so forth in Mexico. The one thing I preach is that the one way that we need to combat this national rhetoric, etc., by people who are ignorant to what a binational region really is and what the relationship with Mexico really is, it's just keep living our lives.
keep being the example of what's great, what's beautiful, what works between our two countries. You know, whether facts are important or not important or real or unreal, our lives are. And so you can't dispute, you know, the economy of the San Diego-Tijuana region. You can't dispute, you know, what works between our two countries here. So, you know, what I often say is we just have to keep doing what we're doing. And starting to be separatist and just saying shop here or shop here, you know, one side of the border or the other, is not who we are. So I understand the reaction. You know, our job is just to keep pushing forward.
That was Maureen Cavanaugh of KPBS speaking with Jason Wells of the San Ysidro Chamber of Commerce. Next on Fronteras, the economics of gentrification and its pricey effects on a long-standing Latino African American neighborhood in West Dallas.
The house on Bayon, it didn't last very long. He knocked it down quick.
We'll explore that story and how students are getting a lesson in corporate economics after this. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to Fronteras. For 7 months, Latino and African American families living in small, weathered rental homes in West Dallas were told they had to clear out by early June. But recently, everything changed. The landlord who had refused to bring the homes up to code offered to sell those homes to the tenants, and a judge pushed the move deadline to October. But here's the thing. Most of the families who've been renting have already left. KERA's Courtney Collins looks at where they've gone and how their economics of living has changed.
For Rosemary Guerra, home is now Oak Cliff. McAdams Avenue is quiet. Not much noise besides the birds and a car cruising by every now and then. She likes it. Still, it's no West Dallas.
Everybody knew everybody, and, you know, we all got along with each other. You know, we never locked our doors. We always with our windows up. I never had a key to our house.
After a lifetime in West Dallas, Guerra moved into this rental house in November. She lives here with her husband, her brother, and her 3 grown sons. It's a 2-bedroom. There's a separate back house, 1 big room with no kitchen or bathroom. They're enjoying it.
We've never had a bigger yard like this.
This house rents for $850 a month. The West Dallas home she rented from HMK Limited was $575. She says coming up with $300 more each month hasn't been too bad. Almost everyone in the house has a job and can chip in. She's glad she found something even this affordable.
Around here, there's a house. They want $1,200 down and $1,200 a month. We were lucky we found this. This is the cheapest one we can find.
The toughest transition for Guerra? She doesn't know anyone.
We were used to being outside in the front, and, you know, we knew who passed by and who didn't. And, you know, here, everybody's like, they go outside, but just to cut the yard and stuff like that is totally different.
West Dallas is different now, too. It's not just all the new restaurants and high-end apartments going up. It's the street where Guerra used to live.
The house on Bayon, it didn't last very long. He knocked it down quick.
Demolition and construction noise is the new soundtrack of West Dallas. Another vacant HMK home was bulldozed Thursday. John Anderson lived in the neighborhood for 44 years. He finally moved out at the end of April.
Didn't want to, what I couldn't afford, but I had to. Now we're pitching in, trying to make ends meet.
Anderson and his wife settled in Oak Cliff, too. Their rent has tripled to more than $1,000 a month. Even though he moved out of West Dallas close to a month ago, most days, he goes back.
I'm going to miss my neighbors, and that's why I'm over here. So I visit them, and I come over here and leave something out for the animals. Got some cats. They be roaming around in the daytime.
This week, after hearing that the remaining HMK tenants can now buy their homes, Anderson felt hurt. He says that announcement came a few weeks too late for him.
Very sad, but we had planned on living our life out here.
This scene has played out many times before, across the country and right here in Dallas. John Greenan runs City Square Housing, a nonprofit that builds affordable homes. He remembers another displacement on the other side of downtown.
It must have been close to the year 2000 because it was not long after I got involved in this area. There was a lot of the apartments along Gaston Avenue were closed for renovation, and their tenants had to pick up and move. Most of them moved further away from the city center, further from jobs, more expensive transportation, lots of times less desirable housing.
Today, Gaston Avenue is lined with trendy redos of the old apartment buildings. Greenan says the folks who leave often head southeast to places like Hutchins or Balch Springs. He says the 305 HMK rental homes are the canary in the coal mine. There are thousands more units in Dallas that will have to be repaired or cleared out if the city sticks to its tougher code.
On a market basis, what people can't afford is substandard, and that's just the reality right now.
And that's because building something new just costs too much.
A one-bedroom apartment costs about $150,000 to build right now in the city of Dallas. And on a market rental basis, you're looking at about $1,000 a month, more or less.
Tenants will pay that or much more for the brand new studios and townhomes going up west of the Margaret Hunt Hill Bridge. Those are out of reach for so many families who called West Dallas home for generations. Rosemary Guerra says she remembers wanting to dig her heels in and stay, wanting to fight until the last minute. When the Oak Cliff house opened up, she was too scared to let it pass her by. She left. And now she's happy she did. One day she hopes to buy this little rental.
It's like I tell my boys, you know, I don't want it for me. I just want some, you know, the day that I'm not here, you have something to go to, you know, have a place to stay.
It's just that she always thought that place would be West Dallas. For Fronteras, I'm Courtney Collins.
When a teenager gets a job, many times it means flipping burgers or ringing a cash register at a retail or a grocery store. A nonprofit organization in Houston is helping disadvantaged students change that by replacing their school backpacks for briefcases. Genesis Works secures internships in corporate America these students might not otherwise get. Houston Public Media's Marissa Cummings reports the year-long program motivates students to succeed in the business world, which can make a huge economic difference in their lives.
We're at C.E. King High School, where 3/4 of the students are identified as economically disadvantaged and qualify for free and reduced lunch. That's why Principal Demetrius McCall makes an effort to give his students the best opportunities possible.
We really try to offer our students a well-rounded education so that when they leave these walls, they don't feel like just because this is my circumstance now, this is going to be my circumstance forever.
The school provides a career prep course led by Darla Simpson.
As the coordinator, I oversee our students that work and go to school. They take the career preparation class along with going to work as well.
Kevin Leha is a student in Simpson's class. His family moved to Houston 10 years ago from Mexico, and he came knowing no English. At the beginning of his high school career, he wasn't motivated.
Sometimes, like, I would not go to class, and I had to pay for the consequences.
Things changed when he got an internship through a program called Genesis Works. It's a nonprofit organization that allows underprivileged high schoolers to experience career opportunities they may not have thought was possible. Simpson remembers when Kevin went from a D student to a B student.
Kevin used to have the mentality, oh, that's good enough. He did just enough to get by. Since he's been doing Genesis Works, he's on top of everything about class.
The program started in Houston and provides students with training during the summer and then places them in a one-year internship with hands-on experience where they receive above minimum wage. Since 2002, they've expanded to 4 other locations across the U.S. Jeff Tolson is with Genesis Works.
Because our internships are a year long, you know, it's intensive. So students are really expected to perform real work of real value to real companies.
The program partners with a wide range of companies, like GE, ConocoPhillips, and AT&T. That's where Kevin interns. In a high-rise office building, he showed me his cubicle, where he has stacks of papers and highlighted maps everywhere. He's involved in large projects that help AT&T decide where to lay cable in neighborhoods.
All of these are designated drawings that I needed to do. And over here, this is big old number right here. 1277, that's how many maps we did over span period of 2 to 3 months. It was a big project.
Tollefsen, the guy with Genesis Works, says they strategically prepare students for businesses like these to fill a void in the job market.
There's a recognized skills gap in terms of having enough tech-savvy talent that's homegrown that can really serve the business needs of companies, not just this year, but for decades to come.
Genesis Works is economically self-sufficient. Companies pay to have skilled interns, and 50% goes to the students in forms of wages, and the rest funds the program.
In many ways, we operate like a for-profit IT staffing company. We just happen to use low-income urban high school students as the trained resource.
Kevin says his internship showed him a future he didn't know was possible.
I feel ready that I could just flat out of high school go and get a job and work in an office.
The company says on average, students 5 years out of the program are now making close to $45,000 a year. I'm Marissa Cummings.
That's it for Fronteras and our stories from the Southwest this week. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org. Alexis Yancey produced the broadcast. Shelley Koffler is our executive producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Thanks for joining us. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.